How do you do? Come with us now, and you'll meet a man who was at one time called by a newspaper the Beau Brummel Bandit. Now, if that sounds a little dashing and glamorous, don't be deceived. Life for this man was a series of disasters. If he knows contentment today, it is only because his heart and mind and life have been unshackled. From Chicago, the Pacific Garden Mission brings you Unshackled, the unique dramatic series that tells the true stories of real people. The first of these programs was broadcast in 1950 over a single station. Since then, it has reached out around the earth to be heard in almost every nation and to be translated and redramatized in other languages by nationals. Pacific Garden Mission opened its doors in 1877, offering help to the men and women of the streets. Now, more than a century later, the old lighthouse is still giving help. Food, clothing, lodging, medical and dental care, and counsel. All are provided without charge. Counselors are concerned with the total person, with spiritual needs as well as material ones. Now Unshackled, with the most remarkable story, as shared with us by the man who lived it. It comes to you on the program that makes you face yourself and think.
Hi, Max. What do you have?
The usual. What's happened to business? This bar ought to be crowded at this time.
They've all been scared away, I guess.
Scared? By what?
Oh, Max, we were held up a couple hours ago.
No kidding. So why should people be scared to drink here now? Lightning doesn't strike twice in the same place, you know.
No, but the Beau Brummel Bandit does.
The what kind of bandit?
Beau Brummel. You ain't read about him?
No.
He's got the craziest M.O. you ever heard of. He heists a place, goes away, and comes back in an hour or so wearing different clothes. And does it all over again.
You think it was this Beau Brummel Bandit that was here then, huh?
Well, seems like it might have been. And that's why most of the customers are afraid to come in.
If it's all the same with you, I'm going to leave right now. I want nothing to do with a drunken hold-up man who's waving a gun.
Too late, Max.
What do you mean?
The guy just coming in the front door is the same one that held me up.
Are you sure?
Absolutely. Different clothes, but the same guy.
I should have left sooner. What happens now?
Well, I go through it all over again. But this time the cops are watching the place.
The man who is known as the Beau Brummel Bandit is the one whose story we have to tell. Ask him why he ran his holdups in pairs, hitting the same victim twice within a short time, and he says, I don't know. I guess I thought it was funny. In support of that explanation is the man's behavior when he was caught by the police. You'll learn about that and much more as we bring you the true story of Jimmy Johnson. Right now on Unshackled.
Well, they caught the crazy guy who tried to pull a job twice in the same place. Now, what they didn't know was that Jimmy Johnson, the Beau Brummel Bandit, came from a respectable home and a Christian background. And my story is one of a life that ranged from Sunday school to Sing Sing, from Wednesday night young people's service to Rikers Island Penitentiary, from Sunday morning and evening services to the Georgia Chain Gang and Green Haven Penitentiary, from a Christian family to beer buddies in Bowery flophouses, from Christian friends to winos in Kings Park State Alcoholic Ward. I was born in the Red Hook section of Brooklyn in 1924. My father was Theodore Johnson, a barge captain. My mother, Natalia Matilda Aronson, came from Norway. Now, my father died when I was only 7. And mother received a small widow's pension and took in Norwegian sailors as boarders. She also worked as a cleaning woman. Mother was a church-going Christian woman who made sure she took my sister and me to Sunday school and church regularly. To her, some of our boarders were a little frightening. They used to gather in a dining room in the evening to play cards. Standard equipment, in addition to cards and poker chips, included a large plate of boiled crabs and a bottle of gin.
Yeah, I've got more gin in my room, but we're running out of crabs.
I tell a woman, Mrs. Johnson, to send one of the kids for more.
Oh, she won't do that. She hates gambling, and she hates drinking. I'll bet you she and the kids are hiding in the kitchen right now with the door locked.
He was right. We were hiding in the kitchen and with the door locked. Soon after that, though, most of the sailors went back to sea. Olaf Jensen stayed, though, and, well, he married my mother. Soon after that, he became a Christian and gave up his wild ways. I learned to have a great deal of respect for my stepfather.
You kids have to be ready to go to Sunday school in 5 minutes. Now, what about you, Tilly?
I can't, Olaf. I don't feel a bit well. But I want you to take the children. It's very important for them to hear the gospel.
Yeah, if I'd gone to church more when I was a boy, maybe I wouldn't have wasted so many years in sin.
Yeah, maybe. But now you're washed clean, now that you are trusting in Jesus. All your sins have been forgiven.
In my high school years, I started hanging around with a bunch of pretty wild kids. I can still remember my first drink. It was also my first drunk. You see, the kids chipped in their money, and I went into the liquor store and bought a bottle of whiskey. I don't remember how many belts I had out of that bottle, but I do remember sitting on a garbage can in front of a house on my way home later that night. Well, the cover of the can came off, and I slipped down into it rear-end first. I was so drunk that I slept in a garbage can in just that position. What a beautiful initiation into the alcoholic world. On April 16, 1942, I enlisted for 6 years in the Navy at Great Lakes and at Signal Training School at Chicago University. You see, I wanted to look like a big shot. So I really started the heavy drinking. As a result, I was court-martialed 3 times before going to sea and 3 times afterwards. Then I drank my way around the world 2x and through a series of invasions and landing operations. The last one was the big one, Normandy.
I don't believe what I'm seeing.
This is your first invasion, isn't it?
Yeah. How many have you had?
North Africa, Sicily, Italy, and some crazy things in Burma, too. But I never saw anything as big as this.
The D-Day thing finally cracked me up, and I was shipped home for discharge. Now, before they could get me home, though, I had racked up time in jail in Nottingham, London, and Plymouth, and in the brig aboard my own ship. At home, with a Navy pension and government checks for $20 a week for 52 weeks, I just stayed drunk. Now, I wanted to quit drinking, but it was too late. I mean, I even had myself committed to Kings County Hospital Alcoholic Ward, and then to the alcoholic ward at Kings Park State Hospital, and stayed in for 7 months. When I came out, I headed for the nearest bar to catch up on my drinking. In 1948, I tried to get to Texas on a bus, but when I got so far as Georgia, I was taken off the bus, drunk and disorderly, and spent 30 days digging up trolley car tracks under the eyes of guards who wore pistols and carried bullwhips. Well, back in New York, I turned to crime and began a series of holdups of bars. In October of 1949, I was caught. I was kept in Raymond Street Jail for almost a year awaiting trial. Although the judge had a reputation for being strict, he was pretty lenient with me.
I've been reading the Navy logbook of the prisoner,
Whatever else he may be, this man has seen a great deal of hazardous service. In my opinion, he belongs in a hospital and not in a prison. But I have no authority to put him in a hospital. I'm going to sentence him to as short a term as I can and hope that the psychiatrist at the prison will help him. 3 years, indeterminate term in Rikers Island Penitentiary.
What the judge didn't know was there were no psychiatrists at Rikers. While I was there, my mother came to visit me regularly.
Well, what do you think of this for a visiting room, son?
No glass partition between us. How did you get a bench visit?
Oh, Bill Churchill arranged it for us. Oh, now I can hold your hand as we talk.
Mom, are you feeling, well these days?
No worse than usual. I'm sad, of course, about you.
And the blood pressure?
Well, I'm taking something for it. Oh, son, I pray for you so much.
Yeah, I don't think it does any good.
Oh, it will. I trust in my God for that. You've heard the gospel, Jenny. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That's in God's word, son, and I believe it.
Mom, I've departed from it.
Yeah, but I think God will have the last word.
I don't know why you should bother about a guy like me.
Well, how can I help it? You're my son, and I love you.
A few weeks after that, my mother had a stroke and died. Handcuffed and accompanied by two guards, I was taken to the funeral parlor.
Go on. You go in the room first. But we'll be just one step behind you.
Hey, can't you take the cuffs off of me? Those people in there around the casket are going to see.
So? You think they don't know you're at Rikers?
Oh, Mom.
Are you satisfied now? You put her there.
I served 2 years of my sentence. I was given a new suit and 10 cents and put on parole, which I quickly jumped. After that, I lived looking over my shoulder. I lived in flop houses on the Bowery. I took odd jobs in hotels in the Catskills in New Jersey. I was a practicing con artist. I worked on railroad maintenance of way gangs, rolled the other drunks I was working with. I also set pins in bowling alleys all over New York. At last, I was caught as a parole violator and had to finish out my 3rd year at Rikers Island. And when I got out, I tried petty things like mugging, and then I graduated to the big time in armed robbery. Pretty soon, the papers were calling me the Bo Brummel Bandit. Yeah, I was bound to be caught. Going back to the same places a second time. On the big occasion, I suddenly realized that police cars were closing in from every direction. As I found I was hemmed in, I threw down my gun. After all, at least a dozen policemen had their own weapons pointed right at me. And then I did a really crazy thing.
Don't move! We're going to put the cuffs on you.
Hey,
load him.
Okay, I'll put the cuffs on him. Come on, you.
This guy's some kind of a nut. I don't understand you. You don't look like you'd do something like this. What's it for?
I don't know. Honest. I don't know. I shared my cell with a young guy named Tommy. Now, he was really a pretty good kid and one of the few prisoners I've ever known who said he'd been framed and was telling the truth.
Are you telling me that you've been having a talk with the chaplain?
Why not, Tommy? Why not?
I guess I just didn't take you for that type.
Yeah? Well, I finally hit rock bottom. I asked the chaplain for a Bible. And he gave me this. It's the New Testament.
Okay, it's your business. Go ahead and read it.
Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. I didn't understand how the Lord could lift me up in a place like that. And after all the sins I'd committed, but I had nowhere else to go. There was no way but up. I wasn't even in the gutter. I was all the way down at the bottom of the sewer. Well, Tommy lay on his upper bunk and watched me, but said nothing when I knelt down on my knees on the floor and began to pray. Now, I didn't pray aloud, but I prayed just the same. Please, Jesus, I don't ask you to help me get out of prison or to get me a shorter term or anything like that. All I ask is that you forgive me for all I've done to you and help me through whatever punishment I have to go through. Tears flowed, and I was on my knees a long time. Tommy said nothing about it. None of the men walking up and down outside the cell did either. But all the sins of those many years rolled off my shoulders.
In a moment, we'll bring you the rest of this true story. Now, a word with Superintendent Harry Saulnier of Pacific Garden Mission. Harry, it suddenly comes to me that Thanksgiving Day is very near, and that traditionally is a very important occasion at the old lighthouse.
And we expect it to be as important as ever again this year. As always, we'll be having as our Thanksgiving dinner guests many of the people of the street.
But when you say many, what sort of numbers are you thinking about?
Well, I suspect the total this year will be something in the neighborhood of 500.
And you'll be serving everyone who shows up?
We don't want to turn anyone away. And we want the Thanksgiving dinner to be complete with all the traditional trimmings. So, we ask any of our friends who feel led to help to do so now, well ahead of the big occasion.
And what sort of help is needed?
Well, we will be serving roast turkey and dressing, mashed potatoes and gravy, bread or rolls, coffee and pumpkin pie. Anyone who has ever put together a Thanksgiving dinner can figure our needs pretty correctly.
There is a constant heavy drain on our supply of staples, of canned goods, of the foodstuffs used in great quantities by our kitchen crew. If the food you provide is not used on the occasion of Thanksgiving Day, someone's going to be very thankful for it on some other day. Our address, Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago, Illinois, 60605. Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago, Illinois, 60605.
Well, my cellmate Tommy was getting close to time for trial. Now, I was pretty sure he was going to be allowed to go free. He had hopes, too. But even so, I could see that some trouble was on his mind. So finally, I asked him what it was, and he told me.
It was summer when I came in here. I've got no winter clothes to wear on the outside.
Is that all that's bothering you?
Isn't that enough?
Hey, look, I don't need this leather jacket of mine. You take it.
I couldn't do that. Why, that jacket's real fancy merchandise. It must have cost you a bundle.
So? You're the one who needs it. Wear it.
You mean you think I'll be back here again and I can return the jacket?
No. I believe you're going to walk out of this courtroom a free man and you can keep right on going, jacket and all.
You mean it, don't you?
Sure. And the Lord bless you, Tommy. It was the only worldly possession I had left. But when I gave it to Tommy, The Lord made me feel so clean. Yeah, I prayed for him many times since. Well, soon after that, I went before the judge expecting to be given 30 to 60 years. Or, if I was very lucky, 15 to 30. When I got before him, I wasn't too worried because I knew the Lord was with me. And when he said, 10 years, Sing Sing, that's exactly what I did. Sing, all the way through Sing Sing, Greenhaven, and Wallkill prisons. Now, convicts don't listen to what they call preachers. A man can very easily get his throat cut, literally, by preaching to another convict. Nah, they only want to see Christianity in everyday living and in action, not in words. I was prison-wise, so I didn't come on too strong. Because I had a small Navy pension, I was one of the more well-to-do ones. I sent away for correspondence courses, Bible studies from Moody, Bible archaeology courses, missionary books from the Word of Life bookstore. And when a prisoner came to me to ask questions, I was ready to tell him about the Lord. But I never tried to force any of my beliefs. Altogether, I spent 3 years on Rikers, 2 years at Raymond Street, and 10 years in Sing Sing, Greenhaven, and the minimum security prison at Wallkill. Then, I was a free man. And that was 15 years ago. Now, when a man comes out of prison, he finds the world a lonely place. I did, I know. I went to work as a painter in hotels, and, well, it was while on that job that I met Mickey. Mickey had been a showgirl and had once been wealthy. But the money was gone by the time we met, and we were drawn to each other, and after a 6 months' acquaintance, were married. We had a lot of planning to do for our lives together.
You want us to go to church, honey?
Oh, yeah, I'd like it. After all, when I was inside, I put all my trust in Jesus. He's going to give us both a great life.
Oh, if you say so, honey, sure.
I didn't learn the truth about Nikki's problem until after we were married.
Hi, honey. Have a drink.
Baby, I don't want a drink. I don't ever want a drink. It's booze that put me in the joint.
You think you're too good to drink with me.
No, nothing like that, honey. I just know the Lord doesn't want me to do it.
Well, listen to St. James, will you? They wrote a song about you, kid. It's a St. James Infirmary Blues.
We were married for 13 years, and she was drunk almost every day. Now, more than once, she had to stay in hospitals for long periods of time. And then after some 10 years, God made it possible for me to buy a little cottage, a one-time farmhouse on Staten Island. I hoped it might give her a new interest in life, but the move came too late. She started getting Social Security checks in her own name, and from then on, her drinking increased. Once, for over 30 days straight, I came home from work each night to find her sitting up on her bed, glancing at me with pure hatred as I passed the doorway.
So you finally came home. Well, where is it?
Where's what?
Well, the money, of course.
I can't give you more money for liquor.
What do you mean you can't give me money?
Honey, no.
Give me money! Give me money! Give me money!
Please!
Give me money! Give me money!
Toward the end, she was 11 days in the hospital, 6 of them being kept alive by a machine. I was at her bedside all those days, and I lost 55 pounds myself. Then at last, she died. Now, people have asked me, why did you stay all those years? My answer is this. In Mark 9:27, it says, "But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, Eddie arose. In 1960, in that cell in Raymond Street Jail, he took me by the hand, and he's had me by the hand ever since. He told me in my heart to be still and stay with my wife. And that's what I did until the end. We may have been married by a city clerk, but when I did, I told Jesus, till death do us part. A day or two after the death of my wife, I spent many hours in prayer. And Jesus put it into my heart to contact the Bowery Mission. This is Jimmy Johnson out on Staten Island. Listen, do you people have a speaker for the night service? Yeah, that's what I thought. There's about 4 feet of snow out here, and I was afraid your speaker couldn't get to you. Now, but don't worry, I'll make it. But I may be a little late.
We're starting our meeting about 5 minutes late tonight, men. That's because our speaker had a hard time getting here. He walked through snowbanks to the ferry terminal on Staten Island, took a ferry across the river, and then took a subway to our neighborhood and walked the rest of the way. All that, and only 5 minutes late, and I say, praise the Lord!
Since then, I've had a growing number of opportunities to tell people what the Lord Jesus has done for me. Now I can see how God allowed some terrible things to happen to whittle me down to size so he can make better use of me. Whatever comes next, I'm ready, as long as I know that what I'm doing is in his will. He has brought me through terrible times. He stood beside me as I put myself through terrible times. But now I know that all things do work together for good to them that love God. And through all this, I really have done nothing. Jesus has done it all, and he will for you, too.
Your own life may be very different from Jimmy Johnson's, or possibly there are points of similarity. Each person is different, but God is always the same. And Jesus came that we might have life, and that more abundantly. To counsel with someone who is concerned about you, get in touch with Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago, Illinois, 60605. The telephone number in Chicago, area 312-922-1462. If you listen in Europe, address Unshackled, care of Transworld Radio, 175 Tower Bridge Road, London, Southeast 1, England. If you listen in the Philippines, address Unshackled and care of the Pacific Mission, Post Office Box 1467, Manila. Take time this week to write and let us know that you hear Unshackled, and as you listen, ask others to listen with you. Unshackled is produced by Pacific Garden Mission to show through true stories that if your life is empty, it really can be filled to overflowing. Write to us this week. Your letters are important. And if you need spiritual help now, you may call Pacific Garden Mission in Chicago, area 312-922-1462. Someone who's concerned is waiting to receive your call. Area 312-922-1462.